For 4 days, 300 souls lived inside a bubble of music and connection. It was called the Jacob Collier Hideaway. It was a truly transformational experience, a place where everyone embraced exploration, openness, and curiosity. But what happens when you leave this bubble? When you're scattered back to your own corner of the world? For me, the experience was too meaningful to let it fade into a distant memory. So this podcast is my anchor, a space to share who you are, stories, inspiration, creative aspirations, and struggles. These are Hideaway Stories. And to begin each episode, I asked every guest to bring a song, a sound, a jingle that is meaningful to them, that inspired them. And this is the sound for my next guest. Danielle,
hi.
What is this? What is the sound?
So that is the violin breakdown in the song Baba O'Reilly by The Who. I was 8 years old when I first heard that on the radio in my mom's car, and I stopped her and I said, "Mom, what is that sound?" And she said, "That's a violin." And I said, "Okay, I need one." And we actually went to the pawn shop that day, because she was like, "There's no way she's going to stick with us." We bought this like $60 violin. And that's when I started to play a violin, and I went on to play for about 12 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. So did you only play privately or also somewhere, I don't know, in a band or?
Yeah, I will say for my longevity, I never got particularly good. I tried. I tried very hard. I loved it. No, I played for schools, so I did, you know, the school concerts and things. I ended up singing more than I played the violin. But even now, just listening to that clip back, I got chills. Just that sound was such a moment for me where I had never heard anything like it, and I knew that it was important to me.
And was it really the instrument itself, like the sound of the instrument, or was it also the notes being played?
I think it started with the sound, but as that song progresses toward the end, when the violin really gets into it, what the violinist was able to accomplish was so striking. First, it was this very like calm and serenading and sort of hypnotic rhythm, and then he gets to this fervent pitch of just speed and talent and transition. And I didn't think one instrument could do that. And it just kind of opened up my eyes and just brain explosion of what you're able to accomplish as far as evoking emotion out of the listener with a single instrument.
I think it's very interesting because usually you don't, I'm not sure how to classify The Who from genre, probably rock, right?
Oh.
And it's, some bands do it. I know that there is sometimes even some classical elements in, like, I know a song from Deep Purple that has like a whole overture of an entire orchestra in there. So sometimes they use it. But it's not very typical to have a violin solo in a rock song, right?
Right.
So was that also interesting to you, or did it have any part of it? Because usually a violin, usually, let's say like that, you will be introduced by it through at least pop, like slow pop music, or the classical music. So did that have any effect that it was rock music that played a violin?
Perhaps. So as cultured as I'd like to think of myself am now, I was raised in a family that predominantly listened to classic rock. I hadn't even heard classic music until I started playing the violin in school. And that, you know, as much as I've always loved rock music, I've always thought of the music I listened to as a collaboration. You know, it needed the bass guitar, it needed the lead guitar, it needed the drums, it needed the singer. All of these people were critical. When I heard the violin and that, I think my first thought was, that guy doesn't need the rest of these people. He's doing great by himself. And that really stuck out to me, especially when then joining the orchestra, because you need every other violinist. You need the cello, you need the bass, you need the viola. And I think that's why maybe that song has stuck with me so much, was as beautiful as the rest of the song Baba O'Reilly is. It really is a beautiful song for all of the instrumentals, and the vocals are great. It was kind of that shining moment where it's like, you can make the difference. One single player can be the complete difference in the success of a song or in the emotion of the song. And I think that at the time I didn't realize that, you know, I had all these deep thoughts about it. I just knew that I was pulled to it. You know, I was very young. But in hindsight, yeah, it was certainly a moment of kind of really understanding what people can accomplish when they really hone their craft.
It is very interesting because the violin is, it is a melody instrument, and you said he could have lived without the band.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that the real emphasis on how great a violin, I always say, cuts into your heart, is when it's backed up with a harmony.
Mm-hmm.
I think a violin really on its own isn't as, it can be very beautiful, but if it has no harmonic emotional connection to like the rest of the emotional field, I always feel there's something missing, you know?
I wonder, we could probably test that. I see, I don't have any skills with this sort of thing, but you are a very skilled editor. Maybe if you ever get a minute, you could isolate the violin from that track for me and I could listen to it and then see if I felt the same.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. We will do that experiment afterwards. Yeah.
I would be happy to. I'm down. I could be wrong. Maybe it would need all the rest. And I would be like, okay, this whole time I thought differently. And that's fine too. You know, happy to learn.
Yeah. Did you ever play this solo? Like, did you learn it?
I did not. That was beyond my scope. I did get the beginning section down when he starts. But if you were to continue to listen, it becomes extremely advanced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe, you know what, maybe I'll pick it back up and see and make that my sort of bucket list thing.
Yeah, it is. I think it's probably exceptionally hard to play something. I mean, the violin itself is already a very hard instrument to learn, right?
It's very fickle and sensitive. You have to really, really want it. There are just so many notes in such a small section of string, and you have to, and I'm left-handed, and the first thing they'll tell you in an orchestra is it doesn't matter. We all play the same direction. You can't have one person going the opposite direction. It's not like with a guitar where if you're a left-handed person, you can play a left-handed guitar. You just have to suck it up and play it the way everyone else plays it. So it was a bit of a challenge for me because I had to reimagine everything sort of upside down. But as with most things, right-handed, I have to kind of just adapt. It's really not that big of a deal. But the violin, it was a little challenge for me in my brain to kind of visualize it flipped.
So you already started playing left and then you changed it?
No, I never started playing left. I assumed that there might be, again, 8 years old. I assumed, like, of course, there's going to be a left-handed option. There is not. I've never heard of one. I'm sure by 2026, there's probably left-handed violinists playing left-handed these days. Back then, there was one music shop where I lived called Pedrini's. They sold all the sheet music, all the music books for all the schools. They serviced all of the instruments for all the schools. And then you had one orchestra teacher who came 3 days a week, and we were all playing the same. So it was a great experience, certainly. But I do wonder, actually, that's another thing. See, you're giving me so much to think about, Philip. I wonder if there are left-handed violinists out there now playing in the opposite direction. That would be interesting.
Okay. I did a small internship, like when I was in school, about 15 years old. In Germany, you have to do like a 2-week something work related, like what try out something that you might be interested in for the future. And being the weird guy I was, I looked up a violin builder, someone who builds violins, and there was a one woman violin builder, I don't know, business, and she did everything herself, and she built violins. And I learned how, like, I mean, I was there for 2 weeks. She gave me jobs that almost like didn't matter for her, probably didn't, but it gave me an insight on how crazy beautiful also this instrument is from a building perspective, like how to build it, because she told me about like which wood is the best wood to buy and how important it is that the rings of the tree, like the year, I don't know how to say it in English, we say it year rings, how distinct they are, how that they are also the same, like always the same distance to each other, and that they're, yeah, it's so interesting how much you have to know, which you don't appreciate when you never built something like that or didn't even think about it. So it was very interesting to see an instrument, and I saw most instruments after that in a very different light. So I was very happy to be part of that small internship.
That's very cool. A very cool internship to select. I wish we had something like that here in the States. Yeah, and you just think about how these instruments, like my uncle bought me a violin that he found at an estate sale that is from Czechoslovakia, back when Czechoslovakia was still one country. And to have something, it's like you think about what escapes these countries, you know, before, not that there was ever a time really before turmoil, but, and it lived, it made its way to safety before, you know, the wars, before the separation, before the renamings or the rezonings. This violin existed in a place that doesn't exist anymore. And I have a closet, kept safe. I've thought about having it restored. I have very conflicted emotions about that because it made it out alive in the state that it's in. And I think I kind of love that about it. But to play it, I would definitely have to have it restored and have it restrung, obviously. But it's still the original bow, so that horsehair now is very brittle. More to come on that, I guess, when I hopefully see you soon. I can let you know what I've decided. But I do have it, and it's definitely, you know, the way that instruments continue to be such a big part of history has always been so fascinating to me.
Yeah. I was just thinking about I'm now reminded of what all she talked about, like how particular it is to build this instrument, and like we call it the F holes. Mm-hmm. Like how important it is to have them on a particular spot and how it changes the timbre depending on where you put them and how wide and how big and all of these things. In Germany, we call it, is it the bridge?
Yeah.
Like the thing that stands, that holds the strings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She let me build like just a test thing, like just the bridge. And she showed me, I don't know, it took more than a day for me to really put the bottom of the bridge, yeah,
the bridge.
That it's really perfectly, like perfectly on the wood of the violin. Because if you just have a tiny mini gap and it's not perfectly aligned, then it basically destroys the entire sound of the violin. Like stuff like that. It's so interesting to have that knowledge.
Yeah, or the strings could collapse if you put pressure in the wrong place, if the bridge isn't perfectly placed.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you for reminding me how beautiful the violin is.
Well,
I really like the instrument. You also said you're singing?
I did. And that I did a little bit more, I'm not going to say, like, it certainly wasn't professional, but I did do some gigs with some bands. I was able to sing at through the school, because I was part of the competition choirs. I was able to sing at Chapman University, which probably has no relevance outside of the state of California. It's for like 3,000 people when I was, I don't know, 15. And then I sang at the House of Blues a couple times in Hollywood with the band. And I just did their backups. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed performing. But then, you know, my life just took a different path. And when I adopted my kids, I kind of hung up any of like the side gigs I would do and dove headfirst into motherhood. But I still enjoy it. I still like going out to karaoke with my friends every once in a while. It's definitely something that I wouldn't so much as call it a hobby, but it's something that, you know, I'll sing when I'm cooking, I'll sing when I'm cleaning, I'll sing when I'm just, you know, messing around. But just with the passion that you see with the people put into actually developing their musical careers, I would never want to suggest that I'm anywhere near that lane. Like people who are really pursuing that passion are just the dedication, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the sleepless nights. Like I am not that. So impressed and proud of people who are. I guess I can call it a recreational singer. Everyone, like I sang for one of my friend's weddings at her request, stuff like that. Nothing crazy. I will tell you this, and this is probably something that is very honest when it comes to like my skill level. My problem is I can sound pretty much like anybody I'm singing along with. So the Danielle sound is still a mystery even to me because I'm more of a mimic. Like if I'm singing along to Christina Aguilera, I sound like Christina Aguilera. If I'm singing along to Pink, I sound like Pink. If I'm singing along to Kylie Minogue, I sound like Kylie Minogue. It's adding my own voice isn't really something. Like maybe it's because I've never written a song, to be honest. So all the songs I know in my head, I know what they should sound like versus what it would sound like if I had written it. So
could you sing, like you say you sound like them, could you sing a Pink song with a Christina Aguilera voice? Like, could you change that?
Maybe, if that would be a stretch in my brain, but maybe. I don't know. I think I'm such a literal person that in my brain, I've decided that that's what that song sounds like because that is the way I've heard it. And I've got a pretty good memory. So I don't know if there would just be like a computer error in my head that says, no, that's not how this song sounds. That's wrong.
And you never went into songwriting? Like why not?
I just don't think I have the chops for it. I think songwriters are brilliant. It's just not a talent, I don't think, that I have. I don't know what that type of talent looks like. I've never felt the pull to write something down that I would want to put a melody to. So, you know, I know that there's so many beautiful and wonderful musicians, it just kind of flows for them, even if they get writer's block or even if they go through a phase where maybe nothing new is coming to them. There's just something inherently creative about these people. And I would honestly say, like, I would feel like an imposter to to suggest that I have that same sort of talent. I kind of think of myself as musically adjacent. I enjoy it very much. I've had some very cool run-ins with it. I've had my very limited experience with it personally, but that I've appreciated and enjoyed. I guess I'm more of a spectator than a creator.
I would love to go in there. What I'm hearing is that I'm trying to find the right way to go in there. Is it that you seems to be a disbalance between what your skill level perception of yourself is and what you feel songwriters do and how good they are, how, at least that's how you explained it. Did I pick up on that correctly?
Maybe. I've actually witnessed a songwriting workshop. I don't know when you want to jump into the whole Dreamcatcher side of things, but it was when I was working at the hotel. I was the conference service manager for a Dreamcatcher events program. And mm-hmm. the artist was hosting a songwriting workshop at the hotel where I worked. And there was probably 75 people in this workshop. And they were broken up into groups. And by the end of a couple hours of sessions, everyone had written something, whether it was lyrics or a new melody or something. And as I'm watching this unfold, I thought, what would I have accomplished in this amount of time? And I feel like my paper still would have been blank. Like I might have come up with a title maybe, but just the way in which everyone tapped into this creative stream sort of simultaneously, it felt as though they had the password to a secret realm and I was the doorkeeper. And it was still a very cool place to be, but it just, and that's okay. I never really had an ambition to be a songwriter, but I don't know that if I really put my mind to it, it would be something in my wheelhouse.
I think that I can almost certainly say for sure that it's, I don't believe you.
Well, thank you. you know, it's, I don't express myself in that way. Maybe, do you write songs?
Not like a typical songwriter would. I produce music. I dabble around with harmony. I make mostly electronic music. I wrote lyrics. I wrote a lot of lyrics in the last years, which I because I can't sing at all. I didn't really put a melody to. I had something in my mind, but I had a lot of lyrics in the last time, and that I did, yes. But what I feel from your part is, I don't think that, like, the perception that you have and how you speak about yourself, I feel that you don't, of course, you don't have to be a songwriter, but I feel that there is a gap between what I think you're capable of and what you feel, what you maybe can or cannot do. Because I think that the way that you speak about just the violin part from this Baba O'Reilly song, and what it did to you, I cannot see that you are somehow disconnected from this realm that you talked about, that you don't have the key. I think you do have it, but I think that maybe it's just something you distance yourself from a bit because you, and that's where I saw this imbalance. That's what I mentioned, because you put maybe someone else who's writing songs on a pedestal that, you know, that you maybe in your perception don't see for yourself or something like that. And I want to challenge that. So, and I don't have say that you have to write a song. I'm just saying I want to challenge it.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, that's why we do these things, right? That's why we have these conversations to open doors with passwords or keys. So it is something I will definitely mull over. You know, I really respect your opinion when it comes to music, having had the chance to watch you work and just watch how you approach things in ways I've never seen done before. And I think I can speak for more than one person when I say that I've never seen what you were able to accomplish ever in such a short amount of time. So I will have some thought because it's coming from you. So I will give it some thought.
Yeah, I mean, do that, please. I mean, don't you? So, for example, there were some people on the podcast, and we usually, not usually, but for some people, it comes up this, how do you tap into this? Some people call it a stream, you call it a realm, some people call it like a frequency. And then there was Drew who said it's like just the ideas are floating around in the air and you just grab them. Ash said that her way of songwriting is she and Drew, they have over 700 voice memos on their phone, and she just sings in the shower and there's suddenly a melody got running through her. Don't you have sometimes some, especially I feel if you can't sing, that there's something like suddenly you're humming something that you don't even know where it comes from or something like that?
So it's funny, when I hum anything, it's usually the song from Pan's Labyrinth. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
I did.
Yeah, that melody is always, always, always in my head. And I have my Invisalign in right now, or I would hum it. It probably won't come out right. Let's see the... That one. Always. But as far as that creativity goes, I do have flashes of thoughts, but it's always for stories. It's not for music. So I will, you know, my husband is an aspiring actor and he's kind of tried his hand at writing a few times. And then I'll just butt in and say, well, what if it went this way and I can see it happening this way? Or, you know, I'm the friend that you don't want to watch a movie with because about 10 minutes in, I'm like, oh, he was the killer. That person's not even the sister. That's not their kid. Like, I've already untangled it because when I have ideas, I try and tangle them as much as possible and then work backwards. But it is more of like characters or people or mysteries, but not when it comes to music. When it comes to music, I hit this roadblock down to where if I come up with a story in my head, I can come up with what soundtrack it should have. But then when I try and pinpoint the soundtrack, it's almost like I've lost the audio. It's
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's like when my creativity was formed, someone forgot to add the last drop. And it's like, it's out there, but it didn't get mixed in all the way.
But then maybe now I at least I know that my comment wasn't in vain, because, or that there was some merit to it, because you seem to have some creative connection to something. But it's true, maybe it's not music in the first place, but it maybe is story, which is to me at least as grand and as big and as emotionally charged as music can be. So I think story is also an incredible part of where creativity has. I mean, what isn't story? Let's say it like that. I mean, everything is a story. So even the corporate, like branding, corporation, I don't know, capitalism part is still story. So I feel that there is, I can see that maybe I was digging in the wrong hole, you know, but I'm sure that there is some area that you're really good connected to.
Well, I think we just actually figured it out together in a whopping half hour. Is if I am able to creatively express myself in story, and I do acknowledge that it needs to have a soundtrack, what's to stop me from creating that? And I hadn't considered that before. So I will consider that now. And maybe that will be my entrance fee into the realm that I am looking for. So we'll see. I'll actually start to get stuff down. This is, and Philip, look at you. In such a short amount of time, I'm like inspired. I have ideas. This is not what I was anticipating from this. And I love that you mentioned Drew and Ash, because I loved them when I met them. They're very sweet and very talented. And just what they've gone on to do recently is incredible. I think just being around people who are so inspirational and who you trust, because anyone can tell you like, oh, Danielle, you know, you could do this, or maybe you could do that. And it's like, well, thank you. You know, I'm very appreciative of the compliment. But when you're talking to people who know what they're talking about, it's kind of a little bit more like, Danielle, let's see what you got in there.
I want to give it even more, like put a bit more weight on it, if I may, because when you say there might be a soundtrack to it, but you lost the audio, do you have the emotion of the soundtrack?
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe that is your connection to the translation into audio. That the emotion is maybe the catalyst to becoming audio.
I'm going to watch this podcast back probably like 50 times. And what if I hit a roadblock? Just to keep, no, that's a really good point. And I think you're right, just from the perspective of when you can't create something original. Well, not when I can't create something original, that's kind of, I feel like, okay, end of the road, can't do it. Sort of quitter mentality, if you will. But just kind of assigning myself a level of capability or not. And that has been, you know, an ongoing thing. So I will definitely take that into consideration.
I love it. I'm so happy. So, another question about singing. Why didn't at least it seems that you're at least confident enough to sing in front of people and have at least background vocals. Why didn't you join in and hide away? I never saw you in a session.
I was busy. I was very, very, very busy at Hideaway.
Okay. Okay.
I loved hearing it. I loved seeing it. I take what I do. So should we jump into this now, the Hideaway Dreamcast?
Oh, we can. Maybe introduce it by who you are and what you do. Maybe particularly Hideaway. I want to get also into your general life, but maybe because you had a special role in Hideaway compared to everyone else on the podcast so far.
Yeah. So I just sort of as a disclaimer, I freelance for Dreamcatcher. So I can really only speak to my experience, not, you know, as a Dreamcatcher person, but as Danielle, who worked this job for Dreamcatcher. I had worked with Dreamcatcher once before, but they were my client, as, you know, as referenced at the hotel. I was lucky enough to work with them on Tom Morello at the hotel where I worked. They did such an incredible job. It was the first conference I ever managed after having managed for years that required such specific needs for their campers. I had never had to have guitars and amps and drum kits set up in our event spaces. I had never had to oversee jam session rooms or, you know, just it was so specific and different. So, you know, as Dreamcatcher has grown, which kudos to them, they're incredible. They kind of needed to fill in some positions at some of the camps just to make sure everything ran how they wanted it to run. And I was brought in for the Hideaway, and it was the largest camp I had done as far as music camps go, I did work on John Petrucci with them from the Dreamcatcher side. And the Hideaway, as you know, was new. It was the first of its kind for this camp. And there were quite a few campers and quite a few classes, very talented musicians everywhere. And it was nonstop from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. with making sure breakfast was out and ready and accurate, and classrooms were set up and teachers had the materials they needed. And then it was making sure lunch was set up and ready, and the rooms were being cleaned and available and turned and restructured depending on what was needed. And then adding in like really cool things like the dance parties that we added in at the Carriage House, recording sessions for some of our very talented campers that came up.
Yeah, then there's suddenly people who want to record in the ballroom, something like that.
You know, just on the fly. But only because there was a very, very interesting camper who had quite the setup of an electric tambourine that was definitely not something I had on my bingo card, were these very interesting and unique experiences. The Morning Wiggles were a huge hit. And then the space itself, though, you know, storied and so much history and gorgeous, was just huge. So it's like if there's someone who has, you know, maybe a concern about their guest room or whatever the case may be, then I'm needed at the front lobby. But then if there's a camper who has a concern or a need or a request to maybe check an instrument in the main event space, then I got to get back down to the main event space. So it was the Dreamcatcher team worked pretty, like, I don't know if you had a chance. I'm sure you know, you met Jane. She was incredible. She was our faculty liaison. And then, you know, Amanda and Alex, we sort of just joined together to do what we could. And my whole mantra always with events is, what can I do in every interaction that will make this event something that someone would say, wow, that was everything I could have wanted. And that's kind of the way I just try with managing or running events.
Yeah, I thought that I think everybody, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm sure a lot of people would join in to what I'm saying, is that it was managed really, really well, and that you could really see the effort and from everyone involved, and how actually also if there were concerns or anything that were taken seriously and all of these things. I mean, I don't know many by name, but Alex and Bill, I know these two, but...
Billy,
yeah. So you could really see also how much passion there was. I really loved that part, because that was... I was actually working in the event space for, I don't know, 11, 12 years, and I was on site a lot as well. Usually stagehand or something like that, but I did the creative concepts for events and did a lot of, for like usually for huge brands like Germany brands like Siemens and Adidas and all of these brands. But the people organizing events are usually passionate, but it always helps when what you're organizing for is something that you like. Yeah. Because like for some brands, when we did the event, it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't care about the, I don't know, the, what was one thing like the, yeah, that was one that really people actually didn't want to do with, which was a new vaping pen, something like that. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's really just for making money. That's actually evil to have an event for that. So people were very morally like confused on how to deal with this event. And I can so see that, oh my God, this is such a great audience, such a great people. Jacob is the best. The faculty is nice. Like it must have been so much fun as well.
It was certainly a labor of love. Billy, in his own right, is an extremely talented musician. And he's been working, he's like the main camp guy for Dreamcatcher. There's also Chris Cisneros. He was not on site.
Billy is the one who did the announcements, right?
Yeah. He's a very, very talented musician. And the Amanda, who unfortunately she, you know, got sick, I want to say on day two or three, she's a director of operations, and her brain, the way it works, is so fascinating. She, not only is she on site and present and helping with everything logistically on site, but she's also in charge of all the operations and logistics for the other camps that are either happening or will happen. And then, you know, the people who are emailing with questions about previous camps or future camps, I don't know how she has enough time in the day. She's truly remarkable. But yeah, I will say when you're working with people that all love the same thing, like I didn't have, you know, I needed a point to learn every single camper's name, which I think probably most people were like, oh, cool. And some people were like, that's creepy. Why do you know my name? You've met me one time. And it's because it's just important, you know, where I worked at. I'm sorry, my dogs are barking. I've asked my kids not to let them outside. And, you know, parenthood, that happened. So it's when I worked at the hotel, we made it a point to even print out like photos of our VIPs so that every person from valet to front desk, when you walk in, good morning, Philip. Thank you for joining us. And that just kind of became a part of the way that I operate. And in my opinion, everybody who was there, you know, just the amount of travel and costs and dedication, they're all VIPs. So why shouldn't I know their names? And it was just really, really, nobody was like difficult. Not, I don't know that I would admit if anybody was. Like I might say something like, you know, some were nicer than others, but everybody was just really great and just happy to be there and so easy to like, just so easy to want to just go above and beyond, because it was like, why not? They're the nicest, coolest people.
Yeah.
Or there were the fire alarms, so.
Oh, yeah. The fire. Yeah, good. I mean, that's something that you couldn't... that wasn't in your responsibility, right? I mean, you couldn't do anything about it.
15 years of event experience, I have never had one fire alarm. We had two. I about came unglued. I actually try not to think about the fire alarms. I think I have PTSD from them. But ironically, you know, the first one, which I think may have been announced, was it was confirmed that, you know, maybe someone on the camper side didn't make the best of choices. All good, done. And then the second time it was discovered that it was likely due to a faulty bulkhead. So it was like, okay, one, it was like 50-50. So like, are we even now? Like that happened because of this, and then this happened because of that. But yeah, we actually worked really closely with the fire marshal after that to make sure the system was 100% online and 100% functional. Because if we had one more fire alarm, I was about to just take a like nosedive off the stage. Like I could not tolerate evacuating this group one more time. But everybody had such a, just was so cool about it. Nobody was yelling at me. Nobody was, you know, freaking out on me. Jacob was so just funny about it. I heard he had everybody like rocking out to the rhythm of it, which, you know, thank you, Jacob.
That's the difference between organizing and being a participant, because really, I don't think anyone, like if you bring it up, they remember, but I don't think anyone would remember it like, oh my God, that was so awful. That was the worst and it destroyed my experience. So I don't think it's attached emotionally with something really bad or crazy, like angry thing, like furious thing. It's more like, oh yeah, that happened. It was funny and we done just got back. And so I think from the participants' part, it was perceived very differently.
Well, I'm very glad. And we certainly had some curveballs. I don't know if you remembered that it rained. But
Did it rain?
It rained.
One evening, right?
Yeah, it was mostly during sessions, but we had all those gorgeous decorations outside. And
oh, yeah.
Well, I took it upon myself because we had a guest who needed ADA access to all the spaces. And so I made it my personal.
What is ADA?
So like accessibility with a wheelchair.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Or any other any other assistance based device for mobility. And it's an old property, but I knew from what I was briefed with that all spaces should have been ADA accessible. I just wanted to make sure I personally knew what those pathways were. So I spent a lot of time just completely invading the hotel people's space. They were lovely about it. I was like, I'm coming back here. I know my way around the back of house to find everything. Well, during my journeys of invading their space, I found all these tarps. So when it started raining, I just asked my contact at the hotel. I was like, hey, can I borrow your tarps? And she's like, I don't know if we have any. I can look. And I said, no, I know where right they are. I can go get them myself. I know what closet they're in. And they were very gracious. They let us use them. And we were able to get all of the outside decorations covered in time because they were, you know, mostly made out of paper and wood. And we were able to get them covered. But it was just one of those things that comes up that you can't plan for unless you randomly invade the heck out of a space's back of house. And as you know from doing events, that comes with building great relationships with the property, which starts, you know, at the contract level.
Yeah.
You know, just the process. Shayla, who was not on property, she was about to give birth to her beautiful baby boy. She does all of the contracting for the hotel and the room blocks, and she's brilliant. All of that groundwork that was laid by the Dreamcatcher team before I showed up made it so I had that, like, hey guys, I knew where the chef's office was and the ground floor. Like, I would just go back there and get in the elevator and go down and talk to him if I needed something. But that was, those relationships were critical for a group like this because you have to be able to stay flexible with 300 creative minds. It's not going to be a rigid black and white, you know, there has to be space and ability to accommodate things to sort of ebb and flow.
How much pre-planned schedule was actually changed in the, maybe like, I don't know. For example, I'm just remembering the part where Jacob showed his album, like sneak peek for the first time ever. Was that already in the schedule before the event, or did Jacob just, because I can really imagine him being like, oh, maybe I can show them my album. And then suddenly you have to shift around. Oh, how was that part?
So I didn't have much contact with the faculty, so I can't say for certain. But what I do know is Jacob had originally really, really, really wanted to do it, but it seemed as though it might not have been feasible. So it was in the schedule in the sense that that was the goal. But we also, from my just side of logistics, had the understanding that it might not have been possible for reasons that were not shared with me, but that it was important to him and he really wanted to share it at this specific place in this specific time with these specific people. And with whatever, what may have been the holdup, I don't know what that red tape may have been. It was a fingers crossed. Like, fingers crossed to make it. There was a gap in the schedule with a big, like, we knew what that gap was intended for, but also we had a backup for that amount of time if it weren't able to happen. And then, and you helped. You were lovely. We We had to take away every device for 400 people in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I saw you drowning.
It was, well, fortunately, we had a staff member get really sick and she couldn't be there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we got the system in place and then it started moving. And again, thank you for your help. Alex had help too. I think it was Mike that helped Alex. Yeah, one of the mics. There's three. And we got it done. And it was so crazy. I've never witnessed anything like that happen. Have you? Have you ever listened to a release?
No. No. I mean, I've been part of sneak previews for, as I mentioned, I worked for some companies and sometimes it was Audi, like Audi, the car company. And they sometimes had some models that weren't released yet, even to the public, like for internal, like marketing CEO or something like that. And there is like a special room, like completely like black with a, except for of course the lighting, and there you have to, even like CEOs, everybody has to give their device, but that's maybe 10 people. That's a completely different thing.
It was definitely worth the undertaking for sure.
But you weren't in there. You didn't listen, right? You were outside?
I was outside. I did pop in just because I am fanatical about making sure that all exits are not blocked. And I hate when staff doesn't, like hotel staff either isn't able or they don't have the time, or they're not sure when breaks happen, because, you know, sometimes things go over or stop short. I'll just go in and bust like all the cups or water bottles. It makes me crazy. So I popped in just to make sure all safety and security exits were done, even though we had staff in there who was more than capable of doing that. I just like to lay eyes on it for myself. I was able to hear some of it. I could hear it very well from the lobby, but also, you know, as badly and as cool as everything that was happening was, my job was to be visible, accessible, available for anybody who needed me for any reason, which meant I needed to stay out of the event spaces and stay present. And yeah, you know, it's a little hard when it's like, oh my gosh, they're having so much fun. That sounds so great. But it's like, that's the job. You have to, you know, you get to hear it from the outside, but like you can listen to it and enjoy it. But it's, you know, I'm not there as a guest. I'm there to be available for the guests. And that's perfectly fine with me.
How much did, because faculty, except for Barack, I think, and maybe June Lee, I think they were the only ones who sometimes mingled with campers. Barack was there. Like I didn't even know if he saw his room from the inside. He was around all the time.
Yeah.
But do you know how much was translated from what was happening outside of the rooms, and how much faculty knew about it? Like, did they know what was going on? Or because they were usually in their own space, right?
They knew. So they had the options. It just depended on the way that they operated. And again, Jane was their liaison. So I didn't really have a ton of, except for with Barrick, who would often sit behind the table with me. And, you know, I could always find him in the dining room with everybody. Some of the faculty definitely used their time outside of teaching to work on fine tuning their next lessons, because they were kind of adapting it as they went based on how the last lesson went. So if it was Dodie, I saw her many times. You know, she would do a lesson and then she'd go, okay, well, everything I was planning on doing next, I can tweak that, improve that, shift that to better suit where these people are. And there were a few teachers that were like that, that just kind of taught and then said, okay, I'm going to make some changes now because I see where these people are and I want to meet them at their level, which I thought was great that they were just very immersed in their lesson planning. Beric is, he had his so dialed and was, and you know, they did too, but I think theirs was just a little bit more of like, the what they were teaching was so much different than what Beric was teaching that I could see that they would find that they would want to make some little changes just to make it more personalized. Beric is just a powerhouse. You know, he taught Jacob.
Yeah. I mean, also he's a teacher. He did this lesson probably 100 times. I think it felt like, I'm not sure if you can confirm that, but it felt like the lessons, the masterclasses that where from, or sessions, I always confuse the wordings, the sessions.
Correct. All of those are correct.
Yeah, that some of them were probably more or less created for the first time because they thought about, like, what am I going to do with these people? So I can, I know, at least from Dodie, she said in the class, at least that she just came up with it, like, asking Jacob what she should do. And so I think that there's also a difference to Barak because he just can just start talking for like 10 hours without a break because he's just a brain, you know? He just did it all this forever.
And, you know, he's so funny. He's so funny. All of the faculty, I had a chance to meet all of them, you know, at least once, are so talented and so just wanting to share their knowledge. Their approaches were all, you know, admittedly different, but it was interesting because the way that these camps work with Dreamcatcher is there's the main Jacob Collier of it all, and then the faculty, from my understanding, is it's kind of a collaboration between who the Jacob Collier wants and then Dreamcatcher works kind of together with that. Again, because I only freelance for Dreamcatcher, I'm not completely sure how it's all hashed out, but it does seem like Jacob had his starting lineup of ideas and who he'd like to work with and who he'd like to see there. And it was such a cohesive faculty. Like the way that they were able to hit drums, guitar, vocals, songwriting, the Wiggles, just even with Susie's classes were amazing. And she's so creative. And she's honestly really funny too. Was really just a testament to the kind of people that Jacob surrounds himself with. We didn't have any, like, we didn't have any divas, if you will. Not in the faculty.
Yeah.
Not in the campers. And when you've reached a certain level of celebrity, honestly, I wouldn't have been offended. I would have kind of expected it. Like, who's going to make my life more challenging today? And I don't have a problem with challenges. Just something to overcome. But everybody was just really easy to work with. I was expecting some type of like diva behavior from someone, but literally no one. I don't have any like juicy stories to tell because they were all really great.
What was one of your favorite experiences or like that you still maybe sometimes think about or that pops into your mind or like something that happened that you maybe behind the scenes or maybe just something that everybody experienced? What were some of your favorites?
Your recording session.
Okay. And
as soon as that question is asked to me, it's so clear which it is. It was the recording session that you did with a group. And if I remember correctly, that idea was kind of born on day one or two of wanting to get together and record a version of the song. In a way I had never seen done. I was fortunate because I got to sit in for the listening session and just watching all of you work and watching you direct it and watching this camera slash audio recording attached to this, what I can only describe as like a mannequin head with ears, with speakers in them, and this waltz around the device to create this. And then I remember you directing them to move forward and move back. And I don't know how you were able to visualize how it was going to turn out, like how to know when to tell them to walk faster or walk slower, or these people jump in and then these people jump out. But after hearing the final product, which you had done in, I want like 15 seconds, it seemed to me, was really remarkable. And I remember saying to my teammates that this is the spirit of what Hideaway was intended for. Of course, it was there to witness the brilliance that is Jacob Collier. That's a given. Of course, it was to learn new things from these brilliant faculty members. A given. But to create was something that was a hope, a dream. And to see it happen in real time was really remarkable. And then to have that as a takeaway, like a tangible memory, was very, very special. I'm so glad you did that.
Oh, thank you so much. That's very nice to hear. Very glad to hear it, because I always have a thing with, I always have the thought, I don't know where it comes from, but it probably somewhere ingrained in something that I have to develop or am developing since the last years very much. But when I was young, I always had the idea of, if I ask for something that I want to do and it involves other people, I maybe waste that time and they just too polite to not to do it, but just because of politeness, but not because it's something that they actually also would like to do. And that I've been carrying that for such a long time. And that was especially one of these memories or ideas that I have been thinking about in my head for 10, 15, not 15, but 10 to 12 years or something like that, to have this type of recording. And since I don't ever have access to musicians, I couldn't. Right. And then there was, I mean, Lalo with the harp, and there were people with perfect pitch and guitarists and singers. And it was actually, it was formed on day one, but it was only because Elizabeth, maybe you know her, she's from LA as well. She told me, we were in the pool, and she said, like, you should, because I told her what I always wanted to do. And she said, you should do it. Just do it. Here's so many people. I'm sure they would be glad to help. And I don't know, maybe that was the push that I needed to pursue it. So, that's then how it turned out. And I was so amazed that actually people were willing to, first of all, be part of it. Then that there is a team like Dreamcatcher and you who were pushing for it, and then it actually happened. So, I consider myself very, how do you say, very blessed to have been able to do that.
Yeah.
I love that. That was a treasured memory as well, that Becca came in twice, and then she brought her child to listen in. That was so cool.
Yeah. Her kids, oh my gosh, so cute. Her husband, such a gem. She, again, I can't say enough about all the faculty. What's funny, and the person I haven't mentioned yet is Danny. He owns Dreamcatcher. He was there. He was the one with the dogs.
Oh, yeah.
There. He lives in New York, I believe. So he was able to kind of come in quite a bit and just keep a bird's eye view on things. And he's just so brilliant. This was Dreamcatcher's his baby, his dream. He's the one that started it and grew it and invested so much of his time and energy into it. And then, as all great leaders do, found the right people to put in place to execute these events to his expectation level. And he makes it a point to come out to as many of the camps as he's able to. And each program starts with him. He's the one that starts laying the groundwork of all of the contracts. Shayla, like as I've mentioned her, she's huge on executing, and everyone on the team. But I guess that's another one of my favorite memories, just seeing Billy in his element, because he's such a talent, and seeing just the joy that everyone had, especially in those evening jam sessions, just musicians doing what musicians do best. And everyone got along. Like everyone, there were no egos. There were no, like, I didn't have to settle any squabbles, which can happen with this many people. Usually, you know, with a program of this magnitude, you would anticipate that maybe there's some little hiccups with, you know, just getting along. None of it. It was like I was at a family reunion, but it was nobody who knew each other. And I think that that's just a testament to the type of fan that you are if you are a fan of Jacob Collier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, like I've said, I mentioned the Facebook page still being so alive, and still all of the friendships that have been formed. I've seen people travel together after this and, you know, go visit one another. It's just, it's what you hope to create by creating something like The Hideaway, but it's certainly like the wildest dream to see what it's evolved into.
Yeah. And I think it has. Sorry, ask again.
What was your favorite?
My favorite. Oh my God, it's so hard. I can almost say everything, because I think I slept as little as you. Although my schedule was different, I started, because I don't eat breakfast, I started maybe 8:30 before the first masterclass. I brushed my teeth and jumped to the masterclass, and then I think I went on 3 a.m, 4 a.m, 5 a.m. For example, that recording, I wanted to edit it and produce it as fast as I could, because I felt that I didn't want it to be like something that 2 months later you get in your inbox. I wanted to have the people that were part of it reacting to it. And that's why I, for example, that night, I think I went to bed at 7 or something, because I wanted to really finish it as much as I could at the moment. But I don't know. What was my favorite memory? I think that the one evening, I don't know which day it was, but the one where there were I always call it the under the arch, this entry part, where there was the most lively activity, and Blake was doing a performance, and Alex and Toby did some improvisation, and we had some chanting, some Jewish, I don't know what it's even called, like a ritualistic way of chanting. I'm sure I'm not doing it justice, but this evening was probably where I felt it. Actually, this is, it's almost like, oh, this is what it's about. It's not about Jacob and the masterclasses and all of this. Yes, it is about this, but here I feel this is, for me, this is home. This is, I found my people. I found my tribe. I found my family. You know, this, it really felt like, I had this analogy, I don't know if I mentioned it in a podcast at some point, but it felt like, because I didn't have access to many musicians in my life, it felt like I was some tiger kept in a zoo. And then suddenly tigers are lonely creatures. Probably it's not working with the analogy, but suddenly I'm in the jungle and probably an ape, you know, that's probably working better. I was somewhere in a zoo, some ape. And then suddenly I found my family in the jungle, and we were just swinging from tree to tree and suddenly it's everything is green and lush, and that's how it felt. And I suddenly realized I had so many epiphanies about this as well, because I totally agree. I think with every fan culture, it would have been different. Like every artist who came, who would come, it's a different fan culture that the people are pulled in, which kind of people. But I think it's very much a testament of Jacob and how he is and who he is, that who he attracted people to come. I don't know if that's English, but the people that came because of him, and they're special. I think they're specially tuned to what he stands for.
Yes.
And that's why I feel the energy was how it was. And yeah, and one last part I want to say about this, and I feel it's also especially because Jacob is someone who is so exceptionally maybe unique in a way that he understands the topic, conveys the topic, inspires, but then leaves all the space for everyone else to fill it. Like he has he doesn't want you to do it a certain way, or, oh, I explained it differently. You have to change your like opinion. It's right. Really just, this is what I learned, and now just do whatever you want with it, and everything is right. And I feel that that is so deeply ingrained in his DNA that I feel that that's what people also really felt and took from it.
I would completely agree. It's the music served as the great unifier, but everybody was so uniquely different. It was the music was the thread, but everyone else was the heartbeat that created this environment. And I know that every single person I spoke with just came from such a different background, just from who they are, not even musically. And then, of course, the musical differences. But just to see how all of that was sort of just part of their story that created this one great finale was really, really impressive. I had a great time. And I don't remember being tired. And I was a little scared. I said I was rusty. I hadn't done events in, took like a 6-year hiatus. I've totally changed industries. I would do the occasional wedding for a friend, bridal shower, baby shower, just only for a friend. And I would always joke and say, okay, I'll come out of retirement one more time. And then when I got the call from Dreamcatcher about working with them over the summer last year, I was a little scared. I was like, what if I don't still have it? And my friend Chris, who wasn't there, but he sort of does similar to what Billy does, Billy on a, you know, grander scale. It was him that said, Danielle, this is what you do. Like, you know how to do this. Just do what you know. And I felt like I hit the ground running, but it was certainly good to flex some of those muscles that I haven't needed in quite a while. And, you know, getting back to my hotel room at whatever time that was, because, and to be honest, I probably could have slept more. I'm just such a control freak. And I was like, no, I need to personally check on the jam sessions, all of them. I need to personally touch base with the kitchen. I need to personally walk the ballroom and make sure it's clean. Did I? I mean, no, we have a great team. But for my own prerogative, I was like, I'll get to bed when I get to bed, because this is the way that I operate. And it was amazing. I was so just honored to be a part of something like that.
Yeah. I also remember now when I think about like my favorite parts, there is some interesting thing that there's all these connections that you make and the nice conversations and the things that happen. But also what I sometimes just situations pop into my head, and I love seeing reactions, like people reacting to or seeing the reaction of a person who is experiencing something. And usually I'm a bit more in a, I don't know, connecting to the people who do the event, maybe because I came from there, but also because I can always connect with the people who do the event, because I don't know, I know they have the same similar interest as me. I don't know. There's something that instantly clicks for me. And I also love seeing the reactions, and that's why I'm, what I'm wanted to say is seeing the reactions of the staff to certain things. Like when, I don't know, when a certain, when Jacob says something on stage and can you put up my mic up or something like that. And you see how the staff reacts to it, and like there's something unplanned, or how I was in the back when they listened to the studio recording to the new album, and seeing also while listening, but also sometimes peeking at Ben, who's next in the control booth and in the FOH, and seeing his reaction, or seeing also from the people in the audience, like when something crazy happens and like Jacob's doing crazy improvisation, and then people are so just amazed and mesmerized by the moment, and yeah, stuff like that. I just love it.
It was certainly a magical experience. It remains to be seen, but I did see on Facebook that you are coming to the next Hideaway.
Yep.
Very cool.
I was hesitating, but I had to. I just had to.
It will be interesting to see how many repeat Hideaway visitors there are and how many first-timers there will be.
I know already there is at least, from the Facebook group, there's 8 people saying it. And then I think 3 more that I know from who didn't comment on it. So I guess there's... my guess would be maybe 30, 40 people at least.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
And you don't know if you're coming yet?
It is a possibility. I will potentially see you in August.
That would be so great.
Yeah, I have I shared with Dreamcatcher what, you know, I can do maybe one program a year just with my job and my husband and my kids, but more to come on that.
Okay. Just to fulfill my curiosity, what is your actual job? Because you also mentioned crazy working hours, like very early in the morning. And I was so curious, like, are you a doctor in the hospital or what are you doing?
No, I work for a company, and I always joke about this. If you know who the company is, it's very impressive. If you don't, it is the most difficult to explain. I work for a company called McMaster Car. We are the largest parts distributor in the U.S. We actually sell quite a bit to companies in Europe. I work specifically in the export to Mexico team. So I'm on our export team that focuses solely on Mexico. And I personally start at 5 a.m. to 1:45 p.m. because there are time differences throughout Mexico. And so when I get in, there's already plenty of work for me to do. They're a great company. I get a great paid time off. So when I take my vacation from my actual job, last year I used it to go out and be there with John Petrucci in Vegas with Dreamcatcher, and then obviously Jacob in New York. And so it just gives me an opportunity to do something that I love to do, but that as a parent of 3 kids is just not feasible for me to do full time.
Yeah, I understand. Is it something that you would like to do? Because sometimes in the episodes, I also ask about struggles and goals and stuff like this. So would it be actually your wish to be in the music industry full time, or
honestly, no. And the reason is because I am such the type of personality that would head right to burnout. As I mentioned, I have to oversee everything myself personally. It's just the way that I tick. And when I was working at the hotel, I worked there for almost 6 years before COVID. It was not uncommon for me to get there at 5 a.m. because if my staff can be there to set up, I can be there with them to help and make sure it's done right the first time so that they don't have to put up with me rolling in at 8 a.m. and saying, oh, this table's not right. It shouldn't go right here. Or, oh, move this. Or the stage is this. It can be done with me on site. And then I stay all the way till the cleanup. Because if my staff can be there, I can be there. And it was, you know, anywhere from my minimum day was 10 hours. My maximum day was, you know, sometimes if I had a program in house, 13, 14, 15, 16 hours. And I don't know how to do it differently. So just with my kids being their ages, my oldest at 14, my twins at 13, it is an amazing thing that I love being a part of. I love keeping those skills sharp. It is not something I could see myself doing full time unless they were moved out of the house. And then maybe. But even then, I think I would probably take on a role that's allows me to not have to be there so many hours in a day. And the travel, the Dreamcatcher team is all over the world, like all over the United States, Costa Rica, Mexico, Italy, like who knows where they'll be next. And that type of travel is something that you want when you're in a company like this, but not something that my life with where I'm at with my kids and my husband would allow for. Oh, and I have four dogs. So
four dogs. Okay. I only have one, and I'm getting next week. I'm getting a tiny puppy.
You're getting a puppy. Two.
Yeah, we do.
That's so exciting.
This is just a tiny picture of.
Oh, do you have a name picked out?
George.
George.
All our names are from the Harry Potter universe.
Okay.
So his name is, his first dog's name is Harry.
Okay.
And this one is George, like George Weasley.
Naturally. Do you know what house you're in, Harry Potter?
Me? My house? Hmm? I think I knew it. I think Ravenclaw, but maybe also... we had some technical issues, and now we're back. I just for final thoughts, which house are you in Harry Potter?
Ravenclaw.
Oh, we're the same house then. Okay.
And for anyone who hasn't done it and is a Harry Potter fan, I strongly suggest going on Pottermore.com and getting sorted so you can officially claim your house.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually one open last question that I have for you, and that's like, what is maybe something that you want to talk about and we didn't, or something you want to say that I didn't ask? I mean, I have, of course, a lot of questions, but with the technical issues, I think we cannot overstress the time. Sure. But maybe there's something that you want to share.
Yeah, I think my final thought, especially for the listeners of a podcast like this, is the state of the world right now is scary. And there is a lot of hate and negativity and fear and just really tragic things happening. And people like the musicians that will inevitably listen to this, I encourage all of you to continue spreading your love and your positivity, using your platforms to build each other up and force that light back into all of the darkness, because it's bright lights, like the people that perform music, that can help change lives.
Wow. That's a crazy nice statement. And I'd leave it at that. Thank you so much, Danielle. I hope we see each other in Italy. That would be so, so nice.
I know.
Yeah. And I wish you a great day and hopefully to see you soon.
Yes, same to you. And if you ever need a part two, if you've got more questions, I will find a laptop that works. All right, thanks.